guys, I'm Mark Potter. Welcome to another episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. Guys, today's episode is brought to you by my friends at AP Tech, the Association for Printing Technologies. Guys, I don't know if you know, but AP Tech has been publishing a magazine called Leading Print. And Leading Print is dedicated to the progressive print executive. It is built to support the success of their members and promote overall positive industry outcomes. Leading Print aims to inspire and educate the brightest minds within the printing supply. Go to leadingprint.org to subscribe today. Guys, my conversation today is with Debbie Millman. Debbie Millman used to be the president of the AIGA. She was the president of the design division, chief marketing officer for Sterling Brands for over 20 years. She was the editorial and creative director for Print Magazine. Many of you remember that. She's the chair slash co-founder of the master's program in branding at the School of Visual Arts, which is probably one of the best graphic arts schools in the world. And she's also the founder and host of Design Matters Media, which is a podcast that she's actually been doing for about 15 years. Bottom line is, this is a lady who's got her finger on the pulse of the creative community. She has executed within that community. She's built businesses within that community. And so she is a pretty solid person to get. I was super excited to have her and wanted to get her take on design. Where's design? Where's creatives? How to sell creativity and even get some of her thoughts on print. And she's a very busy woman, so it was a big coup for us to get her. And I thought her thoughts were on point. So without further ado, give my conversation with Debbie Millman a listen. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm super, super good because this is, I'm excited. I'm super excited that you had the time to do this.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a big deal. You know how you've had, you're a podcast extraordinaire. I mean, you've had Godin and Gladwell, and I'm sure those are like big, it's a big coup for you to get the, that's how I feel. That's how I feel with you.
Oh, well, thank you.
You're busy, though. I'm sure you're crazy busy. I really want to delve into where you're at and what you're doing and get some of your perspective on some things. So things are good in your world?
I'm still doing my podcast. Right. My podcast is nearing its 15th anniversary, and I'm super excited about that. I am still running my graduate program at the School of Visual Arts, right. And we have our annual open house on Saturday and our annual alumni event Friday night. I'm super excited about that.
That's great.
I am working on a book, which will be out in 2021 about Design Matters.
Okay.
And just did an illustration for a magazine called The Baffler, which I enjoy doing. And I just finished curating a show at the School of Visual Arts Gallery, which I like very much.
Oh, wow. So you got some plates spinning.
I do. I always like to have some plates spinning.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, I think it's really cool. So just to give you a refresher, so our audience is, the graphic arts industry. I call them marketing service providers, but a lot of them, they're printers. A lot of progressive printers who have morphed into everything from print and wide format and packaging printing to fulfillment, design, marketing automation. So it's, and we've been doing Canvas for 12 years, which is crazy. And so they're a readership that loves to hear from people like you that have great perspective and insight on the people that they work with and what's going on in the creative world and design. And it's interesting. I just came back from this higher education conference in Vegas, And, you know, you look at it and all these industries are going through the same thing. So I thought, you know, I was looking forward to this conversation because I'd love to get your take on where you see the design in the creative industry these days.
I will do my best.
Well, so let me ask you this. So I mean, you still, so you said you just created that graphic. So are you still doing design?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, okay. Course. Yeah. Well, so that's nice.
Yeah. I do a lot of illustration. I'm not doing any corporate branding work other than pro bono work that I feel is helping to improve the conditions of the world in some way. I'm not doing any more design of fast-moving consumer goods and salty snacks and over-the-counter pharmaceuticals and fast food restaurants, things like that. I'm not doing that kind of work, but I do quite a lot of work for nonprofits, and I do illustrations for basically whoever asks me.
Right. Well, and so you're still, now are you still involved with AIGA? Do you still...
I just got the AIGA medal back in April. Oh, that was super exciting. The Lifetime Achievement Award. And still very involved with my local chapter in New York, which is a great, great AIGA chapter.
That's great. Well, and the reason I asked...
I'm also super excited about Ashley Axios taking over as the National Board of Directors president. I think she's going to do a spectacular job.
Oh, that's awesome. I think that's that is really, really cool. And I think, you know, that's what gives you such credibility in being able to talk about what you've seen change in the creative space the most. And I want to talk to you about what challenges they have. And I'll ask you that first, you know, what challenges you see for the creatives. And then I want to talk to you a little bit about how they go about selling essentially the intangible, if you will. I love that you're still doing work and that you're still engaged with AIGA, because that means you still have your finger on the pulse. So when you look at and you talk to all your friends, what are their biggest challenges these days?
I think one of the biggest challenges is the requirement for designers now to be polymaths. There was a time when you could be a typesetter, or you could be a layout artist, or you could be a retoucher. Now designers have to do it all.
Yeah.
And I think that requires multi-level skill sets that are much more challenging in our discipline than they ever used to be.
Right.
You also have to know things like coding and social media and promotion. And so I think where it used to be much more segmented, it's now something that designers need to constantly stay on top of,
mm-hmm.
in a much more significant way. I think that we always had to stay on top of trends, and we always had to stay on top of what was happening in our discipline and in culture. But I think that the requirements now are far heavier.
Yeah. And do you think that that's really fascinating, because I think that's probably pretty standard in a lot of industries where they were really defined by kind of what they did, right? If I was a typesetter, I was a typesetter. And so what you're kind of saying is, you know, that what you do doesn't define you. And I kind of like to always say it's who you do it for that defines you. And do you see agencies and designers maybe being more defined by the markets they serve, and then they can figure out, hey, everybody's got to be all hands on deck doing everything going forward?
I don't know. I think that while individuals need to be multi-talented and multifaceted, I do find that there is more of a distinction now in what agencies say they can do. 10 years ago, I feel like agencies were trying to do it all, sort of that integrated services model.
Okay.
And I don't see it as much now. I think that there's more of a sense of, you can do, if an agency can do that many things, how could they possibly do any of them well?
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. I can see that, right? And so, but do you think that, and so this would go to that second question, do you see them as, because I think the challenge, or one of the challenges, has got to be selling. I mean, it's one thing to say, hey, we're really good and creative and we can do all these different things and we can run your campaigns and we can even code and build websites and yada, yada, yada. But I wonder about how they're selling, and I would be interested to get your take on how selling creative services has changed.
Well, I think that selling creative services is the single most important skill to be able to master, aside from whatever it is you're creating that you sell.
Mm-hmm.
If you aren't able to sell your services, you're not going to have any services to be able to sell.
Right.
And I think that is one of the most important roles in any agency. There needs to be a really solid sales pipeline so that you always are, for lack of a better term, feeding the beast. I don't know that it's changed that much. You still have to find clients.
Right.
You still have to be able to solicit their imagination about what is possible. You still have to do great, great work. You still have to be able to show a return on an investment for that work. I think that what has changed is the availability of platforms in which to make your mark. I think we're looking at a time where in the past, you needed to work much harder to get your work out there.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have websites and social media, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. I mean, when I graduated college, there was no such thing as any of those things.
I know.
And you had to pass the pavement and look in the New York Times for want ads and send in your portfolios and mail your resumes. I mean, all of those things took a lot more time. Building a reputation took years, and being able to create a sense of excitement around your agency or around your work was much more difficult. There was no such thing as anything going viral. So in that regard, I think things have changed. But at the end of the day, if you aren't doing great work that catches the attention of the culture, it really doesn't matter.
Right.
You can't fake that. You can't make that up, and there's nothing that'll substitute it. If I were starting a business right now, I would still do a lot of the same things I did in 1995 when I joined Sterling and ran their new business effort, which was call people. I mean, I think that that's one thing that most people are really afraid to do.
Mm-hmm.
Most people have call reluctance. They're very nervous about making cold calls. I mean, I would say that 90% of the business that I built at Sterling was from initially a cold call effort.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in many ways, the easiest way to do it, even though it's hard, for lots and lots of reasons, it's the easiest way now.
So I think that's interesting, and let me ask you if you, because I think it cuts both ways. So when you talk about the availability of platforms and the general, I mean, there are so many ways to get out there, and like you said, going viral, that type of thing. The analogy that I think about is, I always say, you know, I don't think there's any decent rock bands anymore. And when I grew up, I would say, if somebody said, yeah, you know, I saw Led Zeppelin, right? And you know, if I was a kid, I'm like, you saw Led Zeppelin? You're kidding me. That's amazing. You know, what were they like? And so there was a mystery about them, right? Because everything wasn't so available. And I wonder if, you know, you tapped upon something that's really changed. Yes, you still have to put good work out. And yes, you know, it's easier to get noticed. But maybe it cuts the other way, right? That being so easy to get noticed, you know, that's where the one-hit wonders come from. And I wonder if that lack of mystery, like back in the day, see, you have stories. You know, for you to sit there and tell me in 1995, yeah, I called people up. I built depth. You know, there was depth to my relationships. And those are, I don't know, it wasn't the constancy. And I wonder if that hurts the creative community on some level, because when there's a little bit of mystery, it makes you kind of, leaves you wanting. Are we missing some of that?
I don't know. And I don't know that I necessarily agree with you that there aren't any good rock bands. I think Mumford and Sons is great. I think Bon Iver is great. I think Coldplay is good. And then I also think there are geniuses. I mean, I think he's a wackadoodle, but I think Kanye West is a genius. Right. I think Beyonce is extraordinary. I think Rihanna is extraordinary.
Right.
So I don't know if I don't know that I agree with you. I mean, I don't think that Rihanna and Beyonce and Kanye are rock bands, but they're definitely musicians and performers. And I do think that they're extraordinary.
Yeah.
I think Beck is still doing great work. I saw him recently perform at the Hammer Museum at a fundraiser, and he was fantastic.
Sure.
He was really amazing.
Right.
And I've been, you know, listening to his albums for over 20 years. So I don't know about that. I still think that, I think every generation thinks that the generations beneath them are doomed for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, our forefathers thought that Elvis Presley was immoral, and I hardly think that would even be remotely considered subversive now. I think that there's always a sense of how are they going to manage when they have so many challenges, when we had as many just in a different way at a different time.
Right.
So I don't know that I, long story short is I don't know that I agree.
Yeah. Well, you don't think that there's because of the speed to market or that stuff can't get commoditized a lot quicker. Meaning, you know, there's a lot of like I don't disagree with you. There's absolutely some creative and I'm sure there's fantastic bands, that's always going to be there, but I feel like there's a quantity that it's overwhelming. There's so much of that out there, and sometimes it can be like noise. And I feel like because of these availability of platforms, again, you can speed to market, I suppose, but on the flip side, so can everybody else. And so it becomes kind of overwhelming, if you will. And I wondered if that's why I was asking if it's harder to stand out these days. And like you said, you still have to do good work. That might be the table stakes. The question is, how does someone stand out? And I've always believed that it's kind of who knows you. And so
right. I mean, I think it takes a tremendous amount of work. To be perfectly honest, if I were starting a podcast today, it would be a lot harder for me to make a name for myself than I've been able to, because I've been doing it really since the beginning of time.
Right.
You know, beginning of podcast time.
Right.
I do think it's a lot harder. I also think in with specific sort of insight into podcasting, we're in a moment where there are probably several hundred, if not more, podcasts coming out every day, new podcasts, not just episodes. And I think that we're in the gold rush of podcasting. And I think that'll probably settle down. But what's interesting is that there really is quite a lot of quality. If you look at television, the amount of new television that's coming out, the shows that are coming out are of a much higher quality than they've ever been before.
Right.
And I think that that's extraordinary. I also think the amount, yes, there are probably thousands and thousands and thousands of podcasts to choose from, but there's a lot of really, really good ones. In terms of how to stand out, I think you just have to be relentless with your quality. I think you also have to be a polymath in a lot of ways. I think you have to be really, really self-promotive. I think that's something that I have not done well. I think that probably Design Matters could be much more well-known if I was hawking it a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
I just find it boring and I don't prioritize it. I've had somebody help me a bit, but I still probably could be doing a lot more.
Right.
And I think that it's very hard for anybody that's making content, and I hate that word, but I'm using it in this case, and then also be the person that's promoting it. It feels, or for me, it feels a little icky, but
yeah.
I know it's necessary. What was easier for me at Sterling was I wasn't the person at the time selling and making.
Right.
I was selling and then selling and supervising, but I wasn't a hands-on maker in that regard.
Right. Yeah, I can see that. I mean, separating the publishing from the editorial, if you will, is part of it. But like I said, I mean, even you, the way you are today, you've still got your hands a little bit in it in terms of designing and illustration, which is great because I think it at least keeps you kind of fresh and allows you to connect. So let me back up. Why do you not like the word content?
Oh, because it's commoditized. I like editorial or art. Now it's assets and content. It's ugly.
I love it. We're on the same page. I mean, that's our business, right? So I don't know how sometimes to phrase it. You know, I like to define ourselves by who we stand for, and we try to build community through the creative process and publishing. But I can't stand when somebody says, well, I just need some content and get it out there.
Right.
I mean, my analogy is it's like the guy, walking across the room and seeing the girl and saying, hey, I saw you from across the room. I thought I'd come over and tell you about me. And
mm-hmm.
and it's just, and so it's really, really refreshing to hear you say that content can get commoditized because it does. And that's kind of what I wondered, and it sounds like you've got a history of engagement, whether it was with your clients or whether it was through the podcast, of not just communicating, but you're listening, and mm-hmm. that's I wonder if that's a little bit of a lost art, and I wonder if you see that in the creative field as well.
What aspect of it being a lost art?
Just the listening aspect, and that, that you've seen, when you talk about content getting commoditized, part of it is that people are just trying to generate and throw stuff out there. Right. And
absolutely.
And it's still, cause I don't know if we've got creatives and they always get mad when I say, look, design is a commodity. You still got to have context. Everything by itself is a commodity. It's got to be about who you stand for. And so you were saying that earlier, right? Is that they're required to do it all, but they're required to maybe listen a little bit more. And I just wondered if your peers, you see that with them.
Yeah, I mean, I think most people don't listen. I think they talk and talk and talk, and then they stop talking and they wait for somebody else to stop talking so they can start talking again.
Right. Exactly. Well, listen, let me ask you this. So, because you were the editorial and creative director for Print Magazine, which
yes.
no longer exists, right?
Well, watch this space.
Watch this space. Okay. All right. Well, good. Tell me.
It doesn't exist right at the moment. But there's something happening that's coming that not at liberty to say yet, but will after November 22nd.
Okay. All right. Well, good. Well, then, but maybe without sharing, but going back to print magazine and I'm worried, and maybe you can make me feel a little bit better about this, because I still feel like print is a pretty valuable deal. And obviously I've got...
Without a doubt.
Right.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. I just judged the Stack Magazine Awards, Steve Watson's subscription service, which is extraordinary. And I judged the category Magazine Launch of the Year. And the magazines that I looked at were some of the greatest magazines I've seen in a really, really long time.
Right.
They were amazing. And so I think that it is absolutely proof positive that print is not only alive and doing well, but it's kicking ass.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, sure, it's shrunk, right? And the run length is gone down. But as you said, quality matters. And you know, I combine that with good editorial thoughtfulness. And so it's refreshing to hear you say that look, this is a big deal.
Yep.
It has to play well with those other platforms that you referenced, right?
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so your perspective on where graphic design is with print, because the second part of that is I worry that maybe there's a generation of students or generations of students coming out that might be a bit intimidated by print or don't really know about print because there, you know, there's not as many opportunities. Do you see any of that?
No, not really. I don't think that I find that most of the undergrad students that I teach at the School of Visual Arts, which is definitely one of the best schools in the country, if not the world, is still very much showing that young people are really, really excited about print, the printed product, whether it be a magazine, a poster, a label, a book. They seem really, really, really still very engaged.
Do you think that generation, that's a generation of designers and creatives coming out, but everybody talks about this generation not really responding to print, or they talk, you know, they're so digitally connected. I have maybe a different feeling on that, but do you see that?
I mean, I can tell you that I would have thought that had I not seen the short list that I got of magazines that launched this past year was astonishing. It was astonishing.
Right.
So I probably looked at 25 or 30 new magazines, and every one was excellent. This was a short list of magazines that must have started out as a list of 100 or so, if this was a short list, at least that.
Right.
And I can't remember the last time I was so excited about seeing what was possible in the printed magazine format. It was phenomenal.
And do you think that generation or the emerging generations, because you're not just tapped into the creative part of it, you're tapped into these new graduates, if you will. Do you feel like the next generations are responding to print?
Yes.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah, I mean, I see it as, you know, I see my kid getting these college flyers or brochures, and it's fascinating, right? Because he'll disregard an email, but if he gets something in the mail, I don't know. And again, I go back to, on some level, there's a little bit of a mystery now to print. And I think it makes
Yeah, I mean, I think look at how many graphic novels there are now. Look at the popularity of comics. That's all print.
Yeah. See, so scarcity actually creates a little bit of value, and you know, that's where I think high quality stuff that has a little bit of mystery to it. I mean, print does that. And I love the haptic nature of it. And obviously I'm probably preaching to the choir in that respect. But, you know, I feel like it's got a real role going forward. So, well, let me, you know, I don't want to take up too much of your time today, but I do want to find out, you know, as someone who has been involved on so many different levels with creatives from you know, running the design division at Sterling to launching your own podcast back when, you know, 15 years ago, and also teaching, what do you think in business in general has changed the most for you over the last 10, 15 years? What kind of things have changed?
The number of women in leadership. The number of minorities in leadership. I think that there's still a long way to go, but the diversity that I'm encountering, both in business and in the classroom and on the stage, is really encouraging.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that out at this higher ed deal. I went out to the AMA thing, and it's just, I don't know, it's a good vibe, right? I mean, and there's more creativity in the conversations, and so and that's a really, really cool thing. Well, we will obviously stay tuned for some of these changes, but. Your advice to the print community as they continue, I mean, they've obviously been selling to the creatives all these years. Any thoughts on how that dynamic has changed and what advice you might have for them?
Keep innovating. I think the people that are doing the most innovating in print have the biggest opportunity to make a difference now.
Right, right. That's great. And then one last question. So maybe I should have started with this because, you know, I was so enamored with seeing who you've interviewed over the course of time. Can you give me a couple tidbits of some of the best things that you've learned from your podcast over the years and you know, maybe best stories or best ideas?
Well, I think that the biggest lesson that I've learned is that no matter how accomplished the person is, there's always a sense of wanting to be better and worrying about not keeping up or being insecure about your future or being insecure about uncertainty or hitting it out of the ballpark again. And that gave me a lot of encouragement in that there wasn't an expectation that there was a moment in time where you made it. Mm-hmm. It seems like success is a journey and that you can take whichever path you want, but the notion of ever feeling like this is it is really a fallacy. I interviewed David Lee Roth a couple of months ago, the former lead singer of Van Halen. And
right.
I asked what it felt like to be, during the 80s, you know, the biggest rock star in the world,
right,
in the absolute world, especially since actually this works well with the notion of rock bands.
Right.
And I think we have nice symmetry in the podcast in this episode, in that I asked him, what did it feel like, you know, to be one of the most famous people in the world in that moment? And he cautioned me and he said, you know, you have to be really careful about those moments because when you climb the mountain and you reach the top, it's usually cold, you're often alone, and there's really only one direction.
Right.
And I think the trick is to try not to peak, to just keep doing great work and try to evolve and grow and not worry about getting to the top, just keep walking in the direction that you feel comfortable in.
I love that. That's fantastic. And I love Van Halen. See, they were iconic. I'm telling you, there was something, you know, the music videos came out and over the course of time, there was more exposure, but it was still a big deal, right? Today you can you know, you can YouTube there any concert, but I don't know. That's why I'm saying I think there was some real cachet when there was that mystery to it, but that's awesome. I mean, who would have thought David Lee Roth giving life advice? That's a great quote. I'm gonna use that for myself. So, well, Debbie, hey. I think this is fantastic. I am super super excited that you took a few minutes to spend some time with me. I also can't wait to hear what's going on with you, and I think you should be super proud of what you've done. I mean, I think that it kind of, you know, it looks like you're going to continue to climb your mountains, and so.
Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. All right, so listen, and when I'm up your way, then we'll go out and grab a cocktail and solve all the world's troubles.
You got it. Done.
All right, Debbie. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Talk soon.
See ya. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Debbie Millman. I thought it was pretty interesting, pretty much on point. I love that she is in the mix when it comes to creative endeavors. And she's not only doing creative, but she's also been on the business side. I love that she's got practical knowledge and not necessarily throwing the baby out with the bathwater, meaning she still believes in calling people. She still believes in relentlessness. She still believes in high quality work matters. And I think that should be refreshing to our industry and overall. But I also think she understands by the interviews that she's done that you can never stop going, that you have to keep innovating, that you have to keep evolving. And her lessons from David Lee Roth were right on point. So she's a very busy lady, and so it was pretty cool for us to get her. And I really appreciated her time. Hopefully you gleaned a few messages or lessons from it and can put it to use when you're dealing with creatives. So again, a reminder that this has been a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. And this episode was brought to you by my friends at AP Tech, the Association for Printing Technologies. They've got a new magazine. Actually, it's not so new. It's been out, but they're pushing it even harder because it's taken off, and that is Leading Print. It's inspiring progressive print executives. It is a really cool magazine and content platform. You got to check it out. So go to leadingprint.org. to subscribe today. Guys, thanks so much for listening, and I really appreciate it. I know we're headed towards the holidays, we're steamrolling towards the holidays, and I want you all to be safe and have fun, and as always, be the buffalo.